Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Immediately, the rumours started.
The mysterious death of a legendary sports star.
There's this massive landslide of myth.
Legend of Tahti.
And somewhere in there is the truth.
Part of Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service. Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
So let's go. This is the documentary, In the Studio, with me, Laurie Anderson, from the BBC World Service.
Request takeoff clearance.
And we're in the south of France at Miraval Studios, mixing my latest record, Amelia.
I think it's great that we had the full strings a bit more on the surround stems. Strong orchestral, you know, coherent feeling there. Yeah. So I think this is like an amazing.
I'm Damien Quintard. I'm the co-founder of Miraval Studios. And on this record, I'm Laurie's mixing and mastering engineer and also recording engineer. Amelia was such an incredible person, a pioneer.
She was a pilot. One of the things I loved about Amelia Earhart, she said, when I get done with my last flight, which she never did because she crashed, which is why United Airlines is not going to be playing this on their flights. But she said, what I want to do is make a shop for girls. So shop is like learning to cut wood and metal and take stuff apart. So Amelia said, girls want to know what makes engines work too. And they like to take stuff apart. And I'm going to start a program for girls to do engineering. She was ambitious. She was practical. I love that about her. I do really appreciate women who work with technology.
Laurie sent me the first rough mix with all the different tracks.
It was a mess, I have to tell you. That thing was a mess.
I mean, it was a mess, but I knew that it was going to be something incredible. Yeah. Amelia was such an incredible person, a pioneer. It's really a privilege to be able to try to put her message and Laurie's message out there.
I had to jump around from being an engineer to the writer, to the performer, to the producer. And that's what I do anyway. I'm not really so into roles. It's the same with the visual stuff that I do. It's not to say that I don't get a lot of help. And I tend to work with other artists also. The VR things that I've done have been very elaborate. They've been collaborations with Shenzhen Wang. They've all been about flight. It's not a bit of a stretch that I'm just doing this again. Yeah, I don't know. Partly I did this because I was in a plane crash myself, and it was not a peaceful crash. It was a disaster. It was a small plane, and a number of passengers were killed in the front. I was in the back, and it's terrifying. When you're in a crash, you join a crash club, it's called. And you talk about your crash. I think it just calms you down to say something over and over. It's supposed to neutralize it. I don't think it really does. It bores your friends, that's for sure. Like, you're going to talk about that again? Oh, my God, please. So, and also you become an expert in flight safety.
I just need to re-listen, just to recalibrate the levels, but I think
May 20th, 1937. Oakland, California.
I used a lot of her log, her pilot's log.
Fly from California, back to California, to circle the world.
And this is the story of this flight. There's a lot of motors in here. She was the original blogger also, because she was at every stop. On this last flight, she was sending back by cable or phone or scribbled notes her impressions of what was happening. She was always running out of gas. It was a big production to do this flight because she had to have giant drums at every place, and if they hadn't been delivered, it was really a problem.
This is the hallway. When you enter the studio, you're in this kind of big hallway where on the walls you have all the records of amazing artists that came here. AC/DC, Bryan Ferry, Cranberries, Pink Floyd, since 1977.
Guys with guitars and big amps and big old keyboards and, you know, anthemic stuff. This was the place to do that. It's been in its present form just for a couple of years, so it's really starting up again.
How Miraval came up, I was producing records and working in music for about 10 years. And I know I just got a call a few years back, and Brad wanted to meet me. And
Brad Pitt.
Yes, Brad Pitt, to discuss his studio in the south of France that he had, because he bought the place a while ago. And obviously me as a French engineer, I knew what Miraval was, and it's kind of the holy grail for recording engineers. So I was obviously very excited and honored and privileged, obviously, to be, you know, headhunted by Brad for that.
And a console like that, you could have 8 people doing stuff.
You need to mend the ship. Especially back in the days, they needed a lot of people because you had huge tape machines. When you enter the control room on the right side, you see a big SSL 4000. It's a lot of inputs, and it's kind of a legendary console from the past. And the idea here was, to refurbish it entirely, and we use it every day. And then on the other side of the couch, you've got the spaceship. And the spaceship is basically kind of a big white desk with nice curves. I always had this dream of having a Fairchild 670. And a Fairchild 670 is one of the best compressors ever. And also on the left and right side of that compressor, all of those beautiful EQs, limiters, compressors, preamps to get this warm and lush sound from the past, from the 60s, from the 70s. And also at the same time have a great conversion so that we can work on digital stuff like we're doing right now with Laurie.
Viola? Yeah, Viola stuff. Yeah, this is the synthier version of what I'm playing. So I'm a geek, so I love equipment, you know, and I love knob twiddling and looking at things analytically, being able to shape a sound. That's really fun for me. That's what I love to do. So that's what mixing is. You know, you have all the parts done, and then you have to turn it into a coherent whole.
Junaid. Dakar.
She cannot compromise on anything. She has a very specific vision.
Call me paranoid, but did Dakar sound like was down a tiny bit, the orchestra?
Yes. Just a tiny, tiny
just
bit.
Just a tiny, tiny bit.
Like 0.3 dB.
Yeah.
Like she challenges the sound. She challenges the production where she's like, hey, could we make this better? Could this sound better this way, etc.?
But we could punch it up a little bit. I think that wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah. I think we could definitely put it like just a tiny bit up. Mm-hmm. But it's really about getting a coherent sound throughout the whole record. Yeah. There's definitely room where we can add just a little bit more on this specific thing.
Yeah.
What we have in front of us right now is a Pro Tools session. So it's a DAW, a digital audio workstation, where people mix things in it. We have many different tracks that Laurie recorded.
We talk about what it is, and he tries a lot of stuff, and we talk about it, and we go back and forth lots of times.
The first four things that I see are the different stems that we really had to work on, the SFX stems, the loops, the viola, and the vocals.
Let's listen to the loop in Flying at Night. This is the loop that song is based on. And it's a kind of vintage loop for me. I used to make these things by the, you know, the dozens. Slightly hard to count thing, people who were playing this, where is the one? But it's drifting. So we put a, we could add maybe if you add the bass drum here. And then there was another little drum part in there that, da 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 boom. That's the bass line. This bass player, Tony Shearer, is a fantastic player. Some people, of course, put the bass on first. You can stop. he put this on last. So he's doing da-ba-da-ba-do. The orchestra all played together. There is one little string trio that played together. Otherwise, everybody else is trying to... Yeah, there they are. Yeah. Then the other people are jumping in and just doing their interpretations of things and some improv and some parts that I would just sing for them. So I wanted to keep it loose, you know. A lot of it I recorded by myself and then picked through for weeks on my own, kind of going, ooh, this bass line has to go here. I'll sample it and pull it like 5 minutes later and put it there. So it's like making a giant puzzle, and I just love puzzles.
Lori's project was one of the most extensive projects I've ever done because it's a long time coming.
I was asked to write something about flight from the American Composers Orchestra 20-some years ago. So I wrote a long piece for full orchestra, and I kind of orchestrated it mostly myself. I thought, how hard could it be? Well, I'm such an idiot. Anyway, they played it at Carnegie Hall, and the rehearsal was the night before. They played this thing, and it was literally the worst thing I'd ever heard. Like, just about the worst thing. The conductor, Dennis Russell Davies, turned around after the rehearsal and goes, so how's that? I was like, I didn't know what to say. You know, horrible. Anyway, the next night, it sounded exactly as bad as it had in the rehearsal. But people applauded as if they'd heard actual music. I was like, what are you talking about? That's terrible. And like they thought, well, maybe it should have been in a cacophonous and just like rah, and everything wrong. And much later, maybe 10 years later, Dennis calls me up and goes, you know that Amelia piece? I was, yeah. He said, you know, there's some really beautiful things in that, but let me just put them in a string orchestra. Let's forget all the other stuff. And it sounded good. Then much later than that, he got his orchestra in Brno, Czech Republic, and they recorded it and listened remotely during the pandemic. Okay. Hey, could that be a little louder? That be a little softer? That a little faster? A little slower? It was interesting to try to record remotely like that. So we did the orchestra. And then for a number of reasons, I stopped completely for like a year. The record company goes, that Amelia thing, did you ever finish that? I was like, no, I didn't. And so I kind of went back, put a lot of other parts on it, and tried to rethink it. And then it just kind of like came to life. So when you have a project that you think is over and it's like you need to abandon it, think twice. If you find that loop first.
The percussion?
Yeah. That thing. So that was a couple of bells and drums that I filtered and sampled and then made a little loop out. And it was really fun watching Dennis, who did the string arrangement and the conducting of the orchestra, trying to show players who are classical players where the little hop is in here. Because if you just go one, two, three, four, you're not quite getting it. So it's got a swing. It's got a little twist in it. And it was really fun watching them get that. And they did get it. But it was not obvious to them. Because it's nothing here is in four or, you know, it's just in these weird signatures that have like little pulls. So I had to do a lot of humming to figure out what these melodies would be on top of the orchestra, because they also were not very obvious. Printed
you
those on top.
Down like carpet,
so that those kinds of things that
down to the water's edge.
That's what gives it its dance feel, I think.
You mixed all of the best things that you do. I mean, for me as a big fan of Lori, the vocoder part and the orchestral part, like.
Yeah.
Are you happy now with how it blends with the orchestra?
I am, because this was, as you know, my biggest fear.
Yes.
Was going to be a person talking over an orchestra, like
exactly.
Peter and the Wolf. The vocoder which adds chords to the speech, helps relate to the orchestra a little bit more. It pulls a few pitches from them, and it blends a little better.
And whispering also.
And whispering. Yeah, thanks to you. We did some vocal recording here, just whispers, because I just needed another little halo around some words.
When we recorded the whispering for the album, we never did it twice. It was always one take, perfect whispering. So, you know, I guaranteed best whisperer in the business.
Yeah. Need any whispering? Call me. Call me.
You're listening to In the Studio with me, Laurie Anderson, from the BBC World Service.
We can take five minutes.
Yeah, take five. And then we
This building is quite historical, actually. Joseph Lambeau lived here in the 1800s, and he invented reinforced concrete here. And this building, where the studio actually is, it's a big 1,000 square meter building, and actually, it's the very first building that was made out of reinforced concrete. The other cool thing that you need to know is, right below us, we've got the winery, the wine cellar, where they actually make, it's the laboratory for the rosé. And it's cool because we're the laboratory for the sound, and right below us is the laboratory for the rosé, so straight to the source.
Well, we're in an elevator, and it's going to take us to the top of the tower. It's going to have a view. You know, there's many acres of vineyards and olive groves. You can see a lake with reflections, and then beyond that is this little amphitheater.
It has Roman origins, so obviously when Brad redesigned the place, he, I think, wanted to honor that also. So there's a beautiful space where artists can come and really create their pieces, play live, and feel a very good atmosphere and acoustic in the middle of the domain. So obviously everything around is part of Miraval. You've got the lavender field, and we grow everything organically here. So when an artist comes over to do a production, we have our own olive oil, we have our own soap. We are obviously very attached to having as much natural product as we can here. When I compare the studio to the outdoors, outside it's so beautiful here. It's so peaceful and it's so inspiring. So we really just try to get the same level of simplicity. The most important thing is not the gear, it's not the speakers, but it's the inspiration that you have when you come into a space. If you look straight in front of you, you have a big window up opening towards the domain. Same for the right side, same for the east, the north, the west. Each main axe is basically supported by light. And in the redesign, light was everything in the studio because I've worked for a lot of time in bunkers.
Red?
Yeah. We're doing the spatial mix.
So much effort, so much work was put into making sure that we could create another universe when people listened to it in an immersive format.
It was the sound of the mirror. The bass drum.
Yes.
We'll probably never hear it quite like this, right?
No.
I mean, you don't hear that on headphones. Here, you really know it's there.
Yeah, this is like a big room where you can feel the entire thing just to see how far you can push it.
Yeah.
But I think we're pretty safe. So basically, we have 9 speakers all around us, and we have 6 speakers in the ceiling, and 8 different sources for the subwoofers to come through.
We can make some of it kind of claustrophobic so that it feels like you're in her cockpit. And then some, you're out in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of like a night sky somewhere. You can just pull the rug out of the mix and you're floating. So it's a perfect thing for doing something about flight. I didn't get motion sick in Brazil this time. It's just a big rough ocean. Mm-hmm. Kind of going to, you know, and it had so much color in those waves of sound.
Yeah.
You know, there's, you could hear all that stuff now.
You wouldn't put so much effort into an immersive mix if nobody could listen to it because nobody really has a gazillion speakers around them. I mean, some do, but it's very, very rare. And the beauty about this new Atmos format is that now we're exporting metadata, like in video games. Video games have been doing this for 20, 30 years now, and music just has finally caught up with it. So what we do is we export all of this data, and there's a handshake that is happening. Imagine you're on your iPhone, and you're going to be putting your AirPods on. The format will basically say, hey, I'm an immersive mix. Do you have some hardware like AirPods that can accept an immersive mix? I would say 99% of the population now can listen to an immersive mix.
The elements were there, but the artistry is in making a space that you can look around in and feel it as opposed to just hear it.
You want to feel the clouds below you. You want to feel the sand. You want to feel sometimes joy and sometimes despair. So it was mostly about hunting those feelings.
I made up her starting to lose it because I could see in photographs that she's looking more and more haggard. So I tried to crawl in her mind and see what she might be thinking about. So I just made up that she was humming tunes to herself, like Road to Mandalay was a popular tune.
On the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play. On the road to Mandalay.
So she starts singing to herself.
There's something shining.
And then she starts getting dreamy as she's kind of going, oh, I have 2,500 miles to go. At her last takeoff, she really said it's 50-50, whether I can find this or not. And she really meant that. Panic sits in because she does try to make contact. And she knows she's going to crash. She's running out of gas. It was just chaos. But it is fascinating to hear reports now of the shortwave people who are tuning into that moment. And those messages were, the cockpit is filling with water. So she, we think, probably managed to land her plane. She was a good pilot, really good pilot, on some kind of atoll, and then it just sank. When she crashes, there's a few beats of silence before you hear the water. It's a huge thing to cut to silence.
It was the sound of the motor. I remember the most.
That's the story of Amelia. We also finished a day early, so I'm suddenly like have to go and pack and leave crack of dawn tomorrow. I was going to stay all day tomorrow, but we were ahead of time.
I think they're waiting for us in the kitchen.
Oh, they are?
Yes.
Okay.
So we have to eat now.
Okay.
Yeah, they are quite hot.
The peppers?
Yes.
Ooh, good to know.
Would you like a hot pepper?
Merci beaucoup. Sometimes the wind blows in your favor and everything goes right and they just click perfectly well. I would say early, it just feels right. Final Masters, Amelia Laurie Anderson. So this is where you have the Atmos stems,
right,
so that you can do shows on,
right,
them. You have full length Atmos Master, so 7.1, and then the actual Atmos Master.
Right.
And you also have full-length stereo masters, HD and MP3.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the track-by-track Atmos, uh-huh, track-by-track stereo, HD and MP3, video master. There you go.
Okay.
Congratulations. Thank you so much.
This really was so great.
Here you go.
I wish I had another project right away.
Well, I mean, I'm here. Okay. You call me anytime.
All right, I will.
Do I have everything left in, nothing left in here?
You've been listening to In the Studio with me, Laurie Anderson,
here,
from the BBC World Service. The producer was Victoria Farron.
Yeah, are they over there in
the
library?
I think I know where they are,
yeah,
on the way to the
cool
tower.
Okay, well, safe travels,
nice,
Laurie. Really take,
yeah,
care.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for everything.
And it was a Just Radio production for the BBC World Service.
He's celebrated for things so much beyond his wrestling. The idea of being kind, compassionate, and helping others.
Mystery surrounds the death of a legendary Iranian sports star.
The state was taken aback by the breadth of segments of society that believed he had been killed by the state.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service presents Legend of Tahdy.
He was not a political figure. He just wanted to help his people.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.